Hello, everyone. This is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. I'm reading for you today in digest format, World Radio, the online edition, for December 2010. World Radio is published by CQ Communications Incorporated, 25 New Bridge Road, Hicksville, New York, 11801. This recording is a production of the Courage Handy Amp System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handy Amp members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Handy Amps may be reached at area 763-520-0512 or at email address handyham@courage.org. Our website, www.handyham.org. We'll begin today looking at World Radio Online News. How former Netherlands Antilles impacts as CQ awards and contests. With the new DX entities created by the breakup of the Netherlands Antilles, questions have arisen regarding their status for CQ DX awards and contests. This announcement updates and supplements the preliminary information that appeared in the November issue of CQ Amateur Radio Magazine. The CQDX Awards. Each of the five islands involved in the change of status retains its previous PJ, Papa Juliet, call sign prefix. That's Curaçao, PJ2, Bonaire, PJ4, St. Eustatius, PJ5, Saba, PJ6, and St. Martin, PJ7. According to CQDX Awards manager Billy Williams, his call is N4UF, the previous entities of the Leeward Islands, which was PJ2 slant PJ4, and the Wayward Islands, which was PJ5, PJ6, PJ7 islands, were deleted as of October 9, 2010. Four new entities, Curaçao, now PJ2, San Martin, PJ7, Bonaire, PJ4, and Saba, slant St. Eustatius, PJ5, slant 6, became active on October 10 for a net gain of two DX entities. Confirmations for contacts made with the new entities will be accepted for CQ award credit, effective immediately. Now, regarding new multipliers in the CQWW, that's the contest, a worldwide contest when it comes up. The country multiplier list for the CQ Worldwide DX contest, in parenthesis, single sideband weekend already held October 30-31, the CQ on November 27-28, and parenthesis, is based on a combination of the ARRL's DXCC list and the DARC's WAE, that's worked all Europe. List. Since the ARRL has also made the same changes, deleting the old Windward and Leeward Islands entities and adding PJ2, which is Curaçao, PJ4, Bonaire, PJ5, slant 6, St. Eustatius and Saba, and PJ7, St. Martin, as four new entities effective October 10. These new ones, that's emphasized, will each count as separate country multipliers in the CQWW. There is no need to worry if your own contest locking software is not updated. According to CQWW Contest Director Bob Cox, call K3EST, quoting, in the end, the log checking software calculates final tallies anyway, he noted, adding that the software is very up-to-date and reflects any status changes. Now, regarding DX Marathon Double Dip, whatever that means, competitors in the 2010 CQ DX Marathon will have a double dip opportunity in working the islands of the Netherlands Antilles for marathon points. Those who worked any of the islands before 10-10-10, that's October 10th, 2010, get credit for either the Windward or Leeward Islands as appropriate. Hams who work them again after 10-10-10 will get additional credit for the new entities, providing a maximum of 6 country credits for working the islands in 2010. It's a little complicated, but if you're really involved in doing these contests, pointing things, you want to listen to this several times, I suppose. Hi, hi. That was furnished by CQ Amateur Radio Newsline. Continuing on the news front, more gear expected to be labeled Made in China. The sales success of the low-price Wuxon, spelled W-O-U-X-O-N, dual-band handheld transceiver, has not been lost on the well-established amateur radio retail trade, according to a report on Amateur Radio Newsline. The five-member buying group Ham Pros announced it will be selling both Wuxon and other made-in-China ham radio gear under the banner of NowChinaDirect.com. That's one word, NowChinaDirect.com. The story noted. In addition to the Wuxon HD, other gear includes several metered power supplies, a pair of SWR, that's standing wave ratio meters, and power meters, and two handheld transceivers from TYT. These are the HDF5 single bander that covers 2 meters, and the UV-F1 that covers both 2 meters and 70 centimeters. That was furnished by Newsline and NowChinaDirect.com and other information. 300 millionth QSO updated to Logbook of the World. Viktor Morozov, a radio call RD3PQ of Tula, Russia, has the distinction of uploading QSO number 300 million to ARRL's Logbook of the World electronic QSL service. January 2011 will mark a decade since the first digital log and confirmation of QSOs in this program were first published. Logbook of the World was launched in 2001. The acronym for Logbook of the World is LOTW. As for Morozov, upload 300 million was his way of confirming a QSO with Ivan Gumbos, Oscar Mike 3, Charlie Golf November, prop rating portable SV2, that took place October 5, according to Amateur Radio Newsline. Oh, here I see another little bit of news about the Republic of China. Special event station BV100, Bravo Victor 100, commemorates Republic of China anniversary. Amateur radio operators from the Republic of China Centenary Foundation in Taiwan have activated special event station BV100, expected to be in operation through December 31, 2011. This operation is to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the Republic of China. Operations will be on all bands and modes, the OPDX reported. You can QSL, ask for confirmation, of course, via BV2KI, Bravo Victor 2 Kilo India. That was furnished by Newsline. Brit receives prestigious DX award. Neil Carr, G0JHC of Preston, England, has been awarded the prestigious Royal Order of Transatlantic Brass Pounders Trophy that recognizes outstanding and consistent DX work. The Royal Order of Transatlantic Brass Pounders Trophy was first awarded in 1924. The original members of the order were from those who operated transatlantic tests from 1921 to 1924. As such, Golf Oscar Juliet Hotel Charlie joins a small group of elite UK United Kingdom operators who have earned this honor. RSGB President Dave Wilson, Amateur Call M0OBW, and HF Awards Manager John Dunnington, G3LZQ, was scheduled to visit G0JGC to present the award. That was furnished by RSTB. Amateur Call HB9EHT re-elected ITU Secretary General. Member states of the International Telecommunication Union have elected Dr. Hamdun Tour, T-O-U-R, HB9EHT, HT of Mali as Secretary General for a second four-year term. Dr. Tour won the position with 151 votes, with 157 countries present and voting. We thank Amateur Radio Newsline for that as well. Well, it's time for the editor's log, lest we forget to mention the fact that this is December of 2010, and we're beginning to think about season's greetings, all they want for Christmas. The editor here is Richard Fisher, KI6SN. As dedicated radio amateurs, we know that it is as blessed to send as it is to receive. At least that's how we're going to spin it heading into this holiday season. So during a recent WRO Live online chat, we asked what amateur radio stuff is on the top of your holiday wish list. Obviously, the chatters had been thinking about this because the responses came fast and furious. Here are just a few. Dave Gomberg, NE5EE of San Francisco, wrote, Xmas wish, sunspots, a sentiment seconded by Angel Santos, WP3GW of Tahil, Alta, Puerto Rico, and Jim McKiersey, W33IT of Zelenopol, Pennsylvania. Will they ever come back? Terry Fletcher called WA0ITP of Ottumwa, Iowa, wants Santa to bring, quoting, a new O-scope. While Kevin Jones, WAKJ of Hamilton, Ohio, put a CW filter for my FD817ND at the top of his wish list. Corey Sickles, WA3UVV, wishes for the gift of more time in Glassboro, New Jersey, so I can build or finish some kits and a home broom transmitter that's tube-based. We hope Santa himself was lurking on the WRO chat that night and taking good notes. From all of us at World Radio Online, here's wishing you a joyous holiday season and a happiest, healthiest, most prosperous New Year ever. Now continuing with the log, October Live Online Chat Poll Results. During October's WRO, that's World Radio Online, Live Online Chat, we conducted several instant polls. In WRO, I'd like to see more, and here's a list. Technical articles, 19%. Human interest stories, 3%. Construction articles, 42%. Humor, 6%. A combination of all of the above, 29%. Will you be operating in the CQ Worldwide Single Sideband DX contest? October 30, 31. That's now passed. Yes, 52%. No, 41%. Not sure, 7%. The economy is having impact on my involvement in amateur radio. Yes, 36% said. No, 50% commented. Somewhat, but not really, 7%. What economy? 7%. And a last bit of information about that. For the year 2011, the beat goes on. Closing out 2010's World Radio Online Live Online Chat schedule is our December 5 session. Sure hope you can make it. Meanwhile, we've racked up 2011's schedule, and it's kicking off like this. January 9, February 6, March 6. If there's enough interest, we'll hold a midweek session or two as well. We hope you'll be able to join us for these Sunday sessions. They begin at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and are casual, friendly affairs. The editor's log is signed, Richard Fisher, KI6SN. In this month's online issue of World Radio, I'm going to read with the Handy Hams at the beginning. We always like to give credit to the Courage Handy Ham System, a marvelous organization that actually furnishes many, many people this recording that I'm doing for you. This one is titled Doing a Lot with a Little When Traveling Abroad. The author is Patrick Tice, WA0TDA, the director of the Courage Handy Ham System. One thing that I always think about when I am traveling is, surprise, surprise, how I am going to get on the air. Would ham radio make the trip when my wife and I spend some time in Europe to celebrate our anniversary? Well, only if I could make it fit into our limited luggage allowance. Our trip took us to Paris, Florence, and Rome, with a short stop at the airport in Amsterdam. What a pity that both the money and vacation days run out before the long list of European countries that would have been fun to visit was completed. Even so, you have to be thoughtful about what to pack and what you are willing to lug around train stations and airports. One thing I definitely didn't want to bother with was any kind of extra baggage that would add bulk and cost to the trip. That pretty much meant that I would not be bringing any kind of HF radio gear, at least none of the kind I own. So, the one piece of ham radio gear that I brought was, drumroll please, a small Dell netbook computer. Besides, I had no idea what the hotels would be like and whether it would be possible to string up a dipole or an end-fed wire. I didn't want to have the hassle of reciprocal licensing and getting permission to operate, much less having to explain an extra bag full of mysterious-looking electronics to wary security officials at every airport. So the one piece of ham radio gear that I brought was, drum roll please, a small Dell netbook computer. I had prepared the computer in advance by loading the necessary amateur radio software and, this is important, testing it before leaving on the trip. My essential software included Skype, Echolink, and W4MQ rig control software. With this combination of lightweight technology, I was able to check in on the HandyHam Echolink Net using the Echolink application and the HandyHam Echolink conference server. I noticed that a German station also checked in during the same Net session, so this kind of operation is no longer considered unusual. The main concern with Echolink is that you need an internet connection and to know how to operate Echolink through a public proxy. I recommend practicing in advance of your trip, whether you are going to London, England, or New London, Connecticut. The reason is that virtually all public internet access will pose firewall problems for the Echolink application, and operating through a proxy bypasses these firewalls, although with a proviso that your time linked to the proxy may be limited to 30 minutes. The process of getting on HF is really a little less fussy than getting on Echolink because firewalls don't seem to be such a big issue with the W4MQ rig control software and with Skype, which is used to port both transmit and receive audio between your computer and the radio that is being controlled at some distant point. I used one of our HandyHam remote-based stations called W0ZSW, and the other, call W0EQO, depending on which one was free. It was fun and easy to check into a U.S. Midwestern regional HF net on 75 meters from Paris and Rome without having to worry about stringing up wire and hauling bulky equipment. Since the netbook computer had a built-in microphone and speakers, there was no need to bring along a headset. Had I been traveling stateside by automobile, I would have brought along a handheld radio, a mobile radio in the car, and a bigger laptop computer with a USB headset and boom microphone. On some trips, I have packed an IC706M2G and a switching supply. But when you have to travel light, you can make do with less and still have a lot of fun leveraging this new technology. I must mention also that Pat Tice furnished two beautiful color photographs with this article titled Doing a Lot with a Little When Traveling Abroad. The first photograph was taken in Florence, Italy. The caption reads, "This HF tri-bander and VHF beam in the downtown region were visible from a tourist vantage point at the grounds of the Medici Palace in Florence, Italy. It must be challenging for the local hams to find space for wire antennas, but building tops work for antennas like these." It shows some of the old top part of the ancient architecture in Florence, Italy. The second picture Pat Tice submitted is captioned, "These HF log periodic antennas at Vatican City mean business." Look at the size of those towers. Of course, that is in the city of Rome, actually Vatican City itself. If you'd like more information about the Courage Handy Ham system, here's some contact information. A couple of options. Courage Center, Handy Ham System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, MN, zip code 55422. Telephone number there is 763-520-0512. If you'd like more information via email, if you have that capability, you can send it to hamradio@couragecenter.org. The ham radio part is one word, and the Courage Center is one word. So again, hamradio@couragecenter.org. And the website, www.handyham.org. Handyham is always spelled H-A-N-D-I-H-A-M, one word. Let's take a look now at promotion and recruitment, titled 2011, New Decade of Opportunity, by DeVere D. Logan, called W1HEO. As a new decade approaches, it promises to bring the usual mix of the old familiar challenges and exciting new opportunities. Before turning our calendar pages, however, let's review the past year. What promotional activities were conducted? What worked and didn't, and why? Did we introduce someone to amateur radio? Did our club recruit new members? The report card may suggest room for improvement, and as the saying goes, there's always room for improvement. Change is a constant, so we should be aware of the new and interesting ways of promoting ham radio. The explosive growth of digital communication is a typical example. Staying flexible and changing with the times is necessary to avoid being left behind. One of the most commonly heard challenges is how to get young people interested in ham radio. Students generally head the list of target groups, which means working with the schools and teachers. Getting our hobby integrated into the school curriculum can be a very tough sell. There are ways, however, in which radio can become a welcome part of some school-based activities such as clubs or labs. A wonderful success story comes from Dolores Lolly Garay, called KD5WZM, who teaches science at Red Middle School in Houston, Texas. She created the Learning About Research and Technology Through Science, the acronym LABRATS, LabRATS program. The after-school activity includes an amateur radio club plus robotics, engineering, and aeronautics. Since its start in 2004, the program has prepared students aged 10 through 12 and adults for the radio exam, taught Morse code, basics of electronics and circuitry, plus helped them to build oscillators and crystal radios. Instructor Garay says that the success of our radio club is the direct result of our partnership with the Northwest Amateur Radio Society and the mentors who have volunteered their time and expertise through the years. Jerry Whiting, called KB5VGD, has served as mentor and liaison with NARS. He's attended club meetings, developed a summer radio chat program, and helped teach basic electronics for camp students. Garay reports that the most recent project was the construction of regenerative radios. It was made possible through the generous donation of NARS and student contributions. Students spent 7 weeks building the radios under the supervision and guidance of 5 NARS volunteers. The highlight of the project was undoubtedly learning how to solder, she adds. This cooperative effort between the radio club and a creative teacher demonstrate the synergy possible when the two join forces. Amateur radio benefits, and so do the students. Congratulations to NARS and Instructor Garay. Now, a question being posed, do you Twitter or tweet? Social networking is getting lots of attention these days by radio hams and clubs. Among the communication modes available to spread the word about our hobby and radio service, internet-based social media such as Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and blogs are growing tremendously. Twitter, for example, is among the most popular with 105 million plus registered users and growing at 300,000 new users daily. That's a hard number to figure, huh? How do hams use it? One current Twitter user is Lloyd Colston, called KC5FM. Lloyd says that one of the early users of social media was Altus Skyhorn Association. It includes a calendar to announce club meetings along with a link to bring weather information to the page. The degree to which social networking is used depends upon several factors, not the least of which is how much time and effort we're willing to devote to it. It is unquestionably another communication medium with special qualities that can enhance our promotional reach in an interactive way. There are pros and cons, just as there are in a number of areas in the ham radio world. So if you'd like to share a success story of your own, let us know at the following email. It's the author's name, one long word, DEVERELOGAN, at gmail.com. Well, being it's the month of December, the following in this article is telling us to have a New Year's checklist, ensuring that your promotional information reaches the proper media and individuals requires regular updating of your distribution list. Reporters come and go. Email addresses become obsolete, shifts from print to online modes need adjustments, and telephone and cell phone numbers can change. Try to check your list regularly. If you put your list on the PC file, it makes it easy to update as well as to print mailing labels. Radio clubs often change their key contact individuals and should be sure to update rosters, newsletters, and other references. If there's a club website, update it regularly. If club meetings are changed to different days or times, remember to check it. Making simple plans for recruiting new club members at the start of the year can establish a clear goal. Get members involved and encourage individual one-on-one contacts plus some public presentations on ham radio. If you need a promotional video, consider using the 15-minute DVD titled Amateur Radio, Wireless Window to the World. Information is on the Ham Radio Promotion Project website. You can go there. It's www.neoham.org. How about holding a licensing class? There's plenty of help available from the American Radio Relay League and other sources that make it easy for most persons to handle. A team of instructors can share the podium and the club can benefit from helping newcomers become licensed. Some clubs provide their newsletter, a welcome letter, and even a free one-year membership to those taking their tests at a VE site. That's Volunteer Examiner site. How can you help newly licensed hams put their stations together? This is where an Elmer or mentor is so important. If your club has a list of helping hams and can distribute it at VE sessions and on its website, chances are he'll build a lot of goodwill and even recruit new members as well. Do keep us posted on your efforts to publicize and recruit. The author is Devere D. Logan, called W1HEO. Devere is a veteran public relations professional and writer. You can reach him at DevereLogan@gmail.com. I must apologize to Dee. I think I always thought Dee was a female. So either I'm incorrect or the word him is incorrect. My apologies wherever they apply, Dee. The following article has a lot to do with our young people, so I always try to include them when I see them in the publications that we record for both the Massachusetts Reading Network and, of course, the Courage Handy Ham System. The following article is titled, Nothing is Impossible, The Art of Keeping Young Hams Interested in Radio. The author, Neil Dabb, spelled D-A-B-B. Neil's call is KC7GCL, Kilo Charlie 7 Golf Charlie Lima. Former Major League Baseball player Chili Davis once said, growing old is mandatory, growing up is optional. whatever your age. Remember that to youth and to those who think young, nothing is impossible. We need to keep this in mind as we usher young people into amateur radio. They're the lifeblood of our future and need to be mentored and encouraged, or we'll lose them. Here are some overarching concepts to consider as we skew our message younger. Connecting with and nurturing teens. Many teenagers won't believe you when you tell them something. They have to learn it for themselves. This is not always a bad thing. There have been lots of great accomplishments by people who didn't know it couldn't be done. For example, when my wife bought a new sewing machine, an old cabinet maker told us there was no way to convert the old-style sewing cabinet. We had to fit her new machine. Just like most teenagers, I was a few years older than at that time. I didn't believe him, and consequently had my wife's new machine in the old-style sewing cabinet within a couple of days. While there is much to be learned from more experienced hands, there are things that young people coming into the hobby will figure out how to do, things that some old-timers have told us for years are impossible. The trick is to keep those young people interested in the hobby, experimenting and learning long enough to make those discoveries. These young hams may also find interest in areas that older hams may have never explored and thus know little about. Subsection here, frame that license and don't let it lapse. The more people I talk to, the more I find that many hams go through times of inactivity. And in some cases, that time leads to the lapse of their licenses. I was a classic example. In high school, I got my novice ticket. The call was KA7ASA. But because of limited funds and lack of equipment, I let it lapse. It was many years later before I came back and re-licensed. I also recently ran into the wife of a man who was a ham at one time, but didn't think that hams were still around. If half the battle is getting licensed, then the other half should be keeping it current. The first thing most of us probably did or should have done when we got our license was to frame the large copy and hang it on the wall. This simple act can be a strong reminder of that one accomplishment and a good reminder to renew the license when it comes due. Now, regarding the value of awards and encouragement, there are also many awards available to all the hams through CQ Magazine, the ARRL, and other organizations. Young people should be encouraged to work toward any that interests them, such as the Amateur Radio Newsline-sponsored Young Ham of the Year Award, with corporate support from CQ Amateur Radio Magazine in Hicksville, New York, Vertex Standard Corporation in Cerritos, California, and Heal Sound of Fairview Heights, Illinois. The 2010 YHOTY, that Young Ham of the Year Award, recipient is 17-year-old Cody Anderson, call KI4FUR, of Harriman, Tennessee. As you'll see, nominees must have made a significant contribution to their community or the nation. But any type of award can be the ultimate encouragement for young people just getting started in the hobby, helping to expand their horizons and get involved. Make sure award certificates get framed and are prominently displayed. When it comes to young people, never underestimate the power of simple encouragement, though they may sometimes say or act otherwise. These young people do respect the opinions of others, especially those who may be older than they are. A few words of encouragement or recognition for a job well done can do wonders for a young person's morale and drive to do more. It is said the difference between men and boys is the price of their toys. All of a sudden, the young people we have gotten involved in the ham radio are looking at toys that are very expensive. Allowances and after-school jobs, or even growing-up paychecks, and only go so far, especially when that money is also needed for clothes, CDs, and other teenage necessities. At a club meeting, I was talking to a young man who was a few months from turning 16. He was plotting how to get a mobile rig that fit perfectly in the car he had been promised by his father. The gyrations he went through involved inheriting a rig his father was using at the time, never mind that it also fit just perfectly into his father's car. We need to make sure young hams have access to equipment, as well as being generous with our old equipment as we upgrade to new stuff. Since teenagers love to shop, make sure they get the chance to window shop at the local radio store. If there aren't any close by, see that they get on the mailing list of a good ham radio supply company or help them search online. Swap meets can be a good opportunity for youth to find affordable equipment, as well as keep the goal of their own rig in the forefront. Birthdays and holiday seasons can be a good time for generosity in this area. There's a great deal of talk about finding Elmers or old-timers to help young people get the technical expertise they need. My father once made the comment that I was either one step behind or two steps ahead of him. Many hams may feel unqualified to instruct or help young people learn about principles that they may just barely understand themselves. This is especially true as those young hams begin to understand the principles behind the equipment and leap from one step behind to two steps ahead. In school, many moons ago, I remember watching a film on geometry. It talked about a little two-dimensional shape, I don't even remember what it was, that told the story of how he met a sphere from the three-dimensional world. As he met all of the new shapes, he began to wonder and ask excitedly about the fourth dimension, and the fifth dimension, and the sixth dimension. At this point, the sphere sternly said that they didn't exist, and thrust the tiny shape back down to its two-dimensional world. How often do we do this to young people when they have new ideas? In the classic television series Remington Steele, the title character was consoling his partner after the loss of her house. "Now all things are new. Think of the possibilities," he said. One of the hallmarks of youth, as well as ham radio, is seeing the possibilities where others see none. To be a champion of youth, make sure that young people have the opportunity to help in any and all public service projects that the local club may participate in. Making opportunities for young people to give presentations at meetings can be a real boost to their self-esteem, another area where we can become champions of youth. While young people may find themselves fighting an uphill battle, they have to start somewhere and should be encouraged to run for offices in local clubs. Sooner or later, they will succeed. It is human nature to desire to be the best and know everything. And while teenagers are more vocal about it, many older people will cling to long-held attitudes, scoffing at or dismissing ideas and accomplishments that young people may claim. When working with youth, we, as semi-grown-ups, must give up enough control to let young people explore and learn, as well as achieve that feeling of accomplishment that we all crave. On the other hand, we should retain enough control so that we can share the wisdom of age that we have. We need to keep the pendulum from swinging too far either way. Well, that was a condensation of a very nice article by Neil Dabb called KC7GCL, titled "Nothing is Impossible, The Art of Keeping Young Hams Interested in Radio." As we move along in the recording for December 2010 of World Radio Online in digest format, I come across a very, very interesting but very, very long article about MARS. That's the Military Affiliate Radio System. They're talking about a small shuffle at Pentagon. Maybe a small shuffle at Pentagon, but this could loom large for MARS. The author is Bill Sexton. His amateur call is N1IN. His MARS call is AAM1RD. Wall Streeters have an apt pro word for companies running into hard times and looking for somebody to snap up the viable assets. They say the company is in play. That pretty much describes the situation confronting Army, Air Force and Navy Marine Corps MARS after the latest Defense Department, quoting, efficiency initiatives, close quote, also known as slashing the payroll, where the hopefully viable assets in play. And fellow members, it's not a game. Here's the story. On August 16, Defense Secretary Robert Gates abolished the Office of Assistant Secretary of Defense for Networks and Information Integration. This was the critical juncture where the three MARS chains of command were jointly tethered to the Department of Defense, DOD. In Army terms, you might say ASD, that represents Assistant Secretary of Defense, was the division headquarters to which our three brigades report. Regrettably, the Defense Secretary's far-reaching cutback plan offered no clue to where we'd be hitched next or when. Should this concern members? Absolutely. It isn't that MARS is in jeopardy. At least there is no reason to think so at this writing. The problem is that at a time just when MARS deserves high-level oversight and attention, the office that had begun to provide it is being dismantled. Quoting, few entities within the Office of the Secretary of Defense understand the capabilities MARS brings to the table and recognize the role it can play to support homeland defense requirements, close quote, a D.C. source emailed. Continuing, fewer still grasp the operational challenges that need to be addressed. Networks and information integrity did, but won't get the chance to demonstrate it. For 6 years, Department of Defense has avoided choices critical to MARS viability in the next Katrina-scale domestic disaster. Now it could take two or three more to implement the extensive efficiency initiatives ordered by Gates and then reset our moorings, according to the insider quoted. The Department of Defense has dozens of cuts mandate, including the entire Joint Forces Command, over which Army General Ray Odner, commanding general of U.S. forces in Iraq until September 1, was slated to take command. On the DOD's list of priorities, what to do with MARS presumably ranks well below finding a four-star job for one of its most highly respected generals. Patience is called for. The timing is just plain awful. After many months of drafting and redrafting, MARS finally got an updated post-Katrina charter last December 23, affirming its responsibilities for defense support to civilian authority, the SCA. That mission now ranks equal with support of Department of Defense components and official doctrine as well as common sense. As for providing MARS with overall policy guidance in matters of the objectives, administration, and operation, the new document known as DOD Instruction 4650.02 assigned that to ASD NII. In an admirable personal initiative, one member of Air Force MARS set about making that connection clear, and he chose a form likely to be seen in the military's upper reaches. David J. Trechtenberg, call N4WWL, who wears two hats as Virginia State AFMARS Director, AFMAR 3VA, and National Planning Coordinator, is a self-employed national security consultant in the Washington area. He's also a former congressional staffer and served in the early years of George W. Bush's presidency as Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy. We'll conclude this piece with his comments. It's titled "The Pitch to the Pentagon on Behalf of MARS." These comments are excerpts from David Trachtenberg's internet commentary on the website of the Armed Forces Communications and Electronics Association International. For decades, the military and specially trained civilian amateur radio operators of the military auxiliary radio system have provided reliable zero-cost backup communications to the U.S. Defense Department and Armed Forces. This civilian-military partnership has served the nation well. The U.S. military's reliance on sophisticated communications architectures and networks is a double-edged sword. It conveys distinct advantages to the armed forces. Yet the more sophisticated the technology, the more susceptible it becomes to unexpected failures, disruption, or destruction from asymmetrical threats, such as satellites' vulnerability to anti-satellite warfare. Systems do fail and can be compromised. Therefore, reliable backup communications are crucial. In a February 2009 Signal Connections article, I discussed how Mars could benefit from OSD's active guidance and oversight. Under the DODI primary policy, oversight for emergency communications initiatives involving Mars was assigned to the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Networks and Information Integration. On April 2010, acting ASD Cheryl Roby declared her strong support for the Mars program and commitment to broadening its role within the department and the combatant commands. The NII, however, is being eliminated as a result of the efficiency initiatives announced by Defense Secretary Robert Gates in August. Many of its functions will be transferred to the Defense Information Systems Agency, the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition, Technology, and Logistics, or elsewhere, where Mars program oversight will reside after the organizational disestablishment of NII remains to be seen. But wherever it migrates, Mars operators remain ready to fulfill their contingency communications mission and to expand their relationship with the Defense Department and civil agencies. Notwithstanding the uncertainties resulting from internal Defense Department decisions intended to reduce overhead, eliminate redundancies, streamline management, and improve operational efficiencies, the value Mars provides to the Defense Department, civil agencies, and the nation should remain strong for the foreseeable future. David J. Trachtenberg, President and Chief Executive Officer of Short Waiver Consulting, is a former Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy and a member of Air Force Mars and SHARES. Well, for a change of pace, let's take a look at the December and then the January Hamfests and special events commentaries. Under December, the call sign WX3MAS, Christmas City, and Delaware Lehigh Amateur Radio Clubs will operate December 11 and 12 from 1400 Zulu to 0200 Zulu each day for annual Christmas greetings from the twin Christmas cities of Bethlehem and Nazareth, Pennsylvania. Operating frequencies are in various segments of the bands for amateur operators. Bethlehem, Belen, New Mexico, Christmas in Bethlehem, that is Belen, New Mexico, spelled B-E-L-E-N, December 18, 1300 to 2300 Zulu. Operating frequencies up and down the bands as well. Now for January 2011, the Foresight Amateur Radio Club will hold its annual First Fest Swap Meet on Saturday, January 8, at the Summit School Athletic Center, 2100 Reynolds Avenue, Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Hours are 8 a.m. to noon, with setup starting before dawn. Admission is $5 at the gate. Fresno Amateur Radio Club meets second Friday monthly, 7 p.m. at Cedar Lane's Bowling Alley, Cedar and Shields in Fresno, California. Williamsburg Area Amateur Radio Club meets on the second Tuesday of each month at 7 p.m. at James City County Library, 7700 Croker Road, Williamsburg, Virginia. You should really catch some of these meetings with amateur societies because they are a great way to introduce you, especially if you're interested in becoming a ham radio operator. Now with the contest corner, the ARRL 160-meter contest is December 3 through December 5. The TARA RTTY melee is on December 4. 160 through 10 meters RTTY. The American Radio Relay League 10-meter contest, it starts at Zulu time 11 December through 22:59 Zulu 12 December. Of course, the band and modes are both 10-meter CW and single sideband. The Radio Amateurs of Canada, the Canadian Winterfest match, is 0 Zulu through 23:59 18th of December. And if you're looking for an international contest, the Croatian CW contest is 1400 Zulu, 18 December through 1400 Zulu, 19 December 2010. We'll go now to DX World, an introduction to Logbook of the World by Kelly Jones, call N0VD. If you have been DXing for any amount of time or have started chasing awards, then I'm sure you've heard about LOTD, that's L lowercase o, TW, Logbook of the World. This is the electronic QSL exchange system developed and implemented by the American Radio Relay League. If you have not yet looked at LOTW or have heard that it's too difficult to use, I suggest taking a look at it and giving it a try. Despite what you might have heard, it really is fairly simple to use, costs nothing to upload your logs, and, in fact, you don't even need to be a member of the ARRL to use it. So how do you get started using LOTW? The first thing you will need to do is have your logs in electronic form. Since computer logging has become quite common over the past few years, this hurdle may already be behind you. If you have yet to begin computer logging, there are many logging programs available. You'll find logging programs for the casual DXer to full-blown contest loggers, ranging in price from free to around $50. The one thing to keep in mind, however, is that whatever logging program you choose, you want to make sure it can export your logs into either the ADIF or Cabrillo format. Once you have your logs into a logging program, you will need to begin the process of signing up for LOTW. At first, the process to begin using LOTW may seem a little daunting. However, it really is quite easy. My advice is to take the time to understand what you are being asked to do. This is where I've seen most hams get tripped up. First, you will need to download the TQSL, Tango Quebec Sierra Lima, TQSL program. That's a trusted QSL, that's what the TQSL stands for, which can be found on the ARRL website at www.arrl.org/logbook-of-the-world-. Currently, there are versions of TQSL which run on Windows, Mac, OS X, and Linux. You can do one of two things when downloading. Typically, you will be prompted and asked if you would like to save or run the file. If you want to save the installation files for later use, perhaps to install on multiple computers, save this file in your system. Something that I have found helpful is to create a directory and save all of your files in this directory. I call mine LOTW. Having this separate directory will also be useful when uploading your signed logs. We'll get to that in a little while. Otherwise, select the Run option, which will install TQSL on your computer. Once the program has finished installing, you will receive a message stating the installation was successful. Now, regarding getting that certificate, now that TQSL is installed, you're ready to request a certificate. This is what makes LOTW unique compared to any other electronic QSL services. When the ARRL developed its system, a conscious effort was made to make it as secure as possible, yet making it easy enough to use. In your Start/Slant Programs menu, you should now see an entry called TQSL Cert, C-E-R-T. You will need to run this program. It may complain that you don't have any certificates created and ask whether or not you want to request one. Answer yes. A wizard will begin. Then simply answer the following questions. 1. Call sign. Use your current license call sign without any portable identifiers. You can apply for additional certificates for other call signs later. 2. Start date. The QSO start date is the first date for which you'll enter QSO records into the system using the call sign in step 1. Normally, this is the issue date for your license. Leave the QSO end date blank for a license that is current. 3. Mailing address. For U.S. call signs, the mailing address you enter should match with the address in the FCC database. 4. Password. You will be asked to supply an optional password. Keep in mind that password is case sensitive and protects your certificate's private key. If you choose a password, write it down somewhere and store it in a safe place. You will need this password when you attempt to sign a log. The ARRL will not know this password, nor will they have a way to retrieve it. Only you will know what the password is. 5. Digital signature. The request wizard includes a step that allows you to digitally sign the certificate request. On your initial request, you must choose unsigned, since you have no certificate with which to sign. 6. Saving the certificate request file. You will finally be prompted to save the certificate request file. Remember, the directory you created above, this is a perfect place to save this file. After you hit save, a message will appear telling you to email or upload your .tq5 request file. You will be able to recognize a certificate request file as it will end with .tq5 file extension. Now, regarding processing, now that you have created a certificate request file, you need to send it to the ARRL for processing. This can be done by either attaching the .tq5 file to an email addressed to lowercase lotw-logs@arrl.org, or by uploading it via the web at https://www.arrl.org/lotw/. If you are a U.S. licensee, you will receive a postcard in the mail in a few days. Remember, the postcard will be sent to the address you have in the FCC database, so make sure that is correct. Once you have verified yourself by following the instructions on the postcard or by submitting the necessary documentation, the ARRL will issue your full certificate, A.TQ6 file. This will be emailed to you at the address you provided during the request process. You may be able to just double-click the email attachments and have the certificate automatically installed. If this doesn't work, save the attachment, another reason to create a directory specifically for LOTW that I mentioned earlier, then run the TQSL cert program. Now, as regard to pleasing the wizard, once the TQSL program is open, you need to create a station location. From the top menu, click Station, then Add Station Location. A wizard will begin. Simply fill in the appropriate information as requested. At the final step, you will be asked if for a station location name. Give this a meaningful name, especially if you have used the same call sign for multiple locations. Now that you have a location created, you're ready to create a log file. If your logging program can export a small number of QSOs or a date range, pick the last 100 Qs, or perhaps the last month, to export into an ADIF or Cabrillo file. This will give you a small amount of data to test with. Eventually, the fun does begin. You have finally reached the exciting part of LOTD, uploading your logs and receiving QSO confirmations. You can upload your signed logs in one of two ways. You can either email a signed log, that's your .tq8 file, as an attachment to lotw-logs@arrl.org, or you may upload the file directly to LOTW after logging into your account, as shown in one of the figure illustrations on this page. So what's stopping you? That is how to get started with LOTD in a nutshell. If you haven't given it a try, I encourage you to take it for a spin. If it's been a while since you last took a peek or became frustrated in the past, take a few minutes to reacquaint yourself. There are many features within LOTW once you get started. I'll leave those for you to discover. Now, listeners, for time's sake, I have had to leave out a lot of particular detail that doesn't help the explanation particularly well, I guess, from my point of view, but the article appears as the DX column on pages 18 through 22 of the December 2010 World Radio Online Edition. Well, happy holidays to all of you, and hope that you enjoy your new year coming as well. Bob Zeta, N1BLF, here on the Courage Handy Ham System, 7388.